Self-evident is a platform that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Scott Phelps. Would you mind introducing yourself for our audience?
Yeah, hi, I am Scott Phelps, Executive Director of the National Marriage Campaign.
I know that Illinois Family Institute, the organization that Self-Evident is partnered with, that started Self-Evident, we have been working with Scott Phelps for years, and we've loved his work. We love his ministry. And I am so excited that we finally are able to have him on the Self-Evident podcast. This is a huge treat for me. Pastor Phelps, what is the National Marriage Campaign?
So the National Marriage Campaign seeks to ensure that every teenager in the country has the opportunity to hear a clearly reasoned, positive presentation on the benefits of abstinence until marriage and instruction on preparing for a healthy future marriage. So we're trying to help young people appreciate and understand the value of marriage and why waiting for marriage matters.
That is such an excellent and needed organization, especially in today's culture. We have a lot of young listeners here for Self-Evident, and I know a lot of them do have a initial like foundation of faith and knowing the Lord as their savior. But what is your argument for remaining abstinent until marriage?
Well, there's a lot there. First of all, what we want to help young people understand is not that sex is a bad thing. It's a good thing created by God for intimacy, for procreation, in the context of a marriage relationship. So there is a way that it is designed to be exercise. Now, one of my concerns is that this generation of young people is growing up in a culture that is saturated by the media in sexual imagery. So phones, computers, television, cable, everything. Kids are constantly exposed to sexual imagery. And our real concern here is not only that they're exposed to sexual imagery, but that none of the sexual imagery really that they're exposed to communicates to them the beauty of sex within the context of a marriage relationship. In other words, there's no context for understanding sex. They're exposed to it, but they don't understand it. And so the message it tends to get communicated to them is sex is dangerous, use protection, bad things can happen to you. If you have sex, you could get a disease. And so there's lots of very negative associations with sexual activity that would be completely or largely, let's say, eliminated if it were communicated to them properly within the context of a marriage relationship. So that's really our burden, is to educate and equip and inform a new generation of American youth to understand why sex reserved for marriage is good and healthy, both for them and their spouse and their children and their culture and their community. Marriage is the cornerstone of culture. And where you have a breakdown of marriage and family is where you're going to find a whole host of social pathologies, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, whether it's drug abuse. Those things tend to be associated with a lack of family structure rooted in marriage. And so there are reasons why God designed marriage to be the cornerstone of culture and the cradle in which babies are to be raised and cared for. I had the opportunity to do a radio interview with Eric Metaxas a while back, and we were discussing this subject of abortion, and someone had brought up the subject of abortion and said, well, there's 1.2, at the time anyways, a few years ago, they said, well, there's 1.2 million abortions that occur in the United States because there's 1.2 million unwanted babies. And so the argument being made was you need to have abortion to care of, quote unquote, the unwanted babies. And I said the reason there's 1.2 million so-called unwanted children in America or babies in America is because babies are to be born into a cradle, and the cradle is called marriage. And when you don't have that cradle, they get labeled unwanted. The answer to 1.2 million unwanted babies, quote unquote, isn't to kill the babies, it's to build more cradles. And so what we want to do is build marriage as a cradle into which children are born. 85% of abortions occur among unmarried women. And so if we can encourage young people to understand and appreciate the value of marriage and family, then when babies are born, there's a cradle for them to be born into, and they have the opportunity to be born into a family, to be cared for, a loving mother and father, married to one another, committed to one another, which provides a security level and care for that child that is unequaled outside of a marriage relationship.
Wow, you just gave so much information there, and I absolutely loved everything you're saying, but I want to backtrack a little bit. What link do you see between the negative connotations of sexual activity in our society? Like you said, you'll get a disease, you'll get pregnant, all these bad things are going to happen to you. And what link do you see that as having a high level of sexual activity outside of marriage? So if there's, I guess my question is, if there's all this negative messaging, why are people not abstaining?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because if, and then there I would have to speculate, right? But my speculation would be rooted in years of experience in talking to young people about this is it's not going to happen to me. All the negative things that you're talking about, that's going to happen to somebody else. It's not going to happen to me.
Okay.
Right? So I'm going to be able to dodge the bullet. Bad things happen to other people. Bad things don't happen to me. I can handle it. I'm good. And so, you know, I'll use protection, whatever. And somehow I will escape the consequences. The problem with the quote unquote protection argument is contraception, is that there's so much more than avoiding a potential pregnancy. Contraception, first of all, is not going to protect you, quote unquote, from getting a disease. That's not what it's designed for. Contraception is designed to prevent the fertilization of the egg, to prevent a pregnancy. It is not designed to prevent sexually transmitted diseases. It's sold as that, but it is, it's really sort of false marketing, right? Because the word, if you just break it down a little bit, the word contraception, contra is the negative prefix on the word conception, right? So conception, to conceive, to be able to have a child. When you put the word contra in front of it, what you're trying to do is you're using a synthetic product to contradict conception or to stop conception from happening. That's the purpose of contraception. The reason I break it down that way is because it's important to point out it's called contraception. It's not called contra STD.
Yeah, that is so true.
And yet teens are told over and over again through sex education classes, make sure that you quote unquote protect yourself by using contraception so that, you know, you can not get an STD, and it's just, it doesn't work. And that's why you have sexually transmitted diseases constantly escalating up and up and up every year. So we have record numbers of sexually transmitted diseases.
And another thing that I also wanted to point out, back to Alyssa's question, there's so much negative messaging around having sex. Why are people still having it? And I was listening to one of your lectures that you've done with Illinois Family Institute in the past when you were at the Worldview Conference for Life. And you were talking about how the majority of kids actually have never heard of the fact of like, oh yeah, you can not have sex till you get married. The foundational teaching of sex in culture now, especially in America, is you're going to have it. So make sure that you protect yourself. It's never like, no, you should save this until marriage.
That's right. So coming back to your very first question, the National Marriage Campaign, that is the purpose of the National Marriage Campaign, is to speak into that void. It's a void that is very real. In other words, it's not a message that kids have the opportunity to hear and to learn. The primary message in American schools today is use contraception, and the message of saving sex for marriage just largely isn't there. And so that's the void that we seek to fill, is to make sure the kids have the opportunity to hear that message. And Alyssa, back to your question about, you know, why, if there's so much negative messaging, is there still, you know, people still have sexual activity? I think part of it is because, you know, they're given the false information that if you use quote unquote protection, I mean, that's why they call it protection, right? As long as you quote unquote protect yourself, you'll be fine. The reality is it doesn't provide protection. And so, right. you know, they think they can dodge the bullet because they're doing what they're told. And how do they know? They don't know. It's what their teacher told them. And so, you know, I do a lot of teacher training seminars, and I try to encourage teachers to know what they're talking about and not just parrot media myths, but rather to speak honestly and truthfully to young people and provide that clear and unadulterated message on reserving all sexual activity for the context of marriage. Now, why the National Marriage Campaign? We started out as the Abstinence and Marriage Education Partnership, and that is still the name of our organization, but we're focused now on the National Marriage Campaign. The reason we want to lift up marriage is because even today across America, so you basically have two different programs going on nationally in schools. You have sex education, which is largely a Planned Parenthood type contraception experimentation message. And let me talk about that for just a moment, because I try to present the other side as clearly and honestly and truthfully as I possibly can. I want to communicate their views in such a way that if they were sitting in the room, they would say, yes, that's right. That's the way I would say it. You see what I mean? In other words, I don't want to, I don't want to fabricate or exaggerate or in any way misrepresent what their view is, okay? So I'm going to try to communicate their view. This is a Planned Parenthood-style sex education program that is largely used in American schools. And what they would say is sex is a natural, normal part of life, and young people need to be taught how to experience sex in a safe way. So we need to provide them with all the information that they need to use contraception properly so as to have sexual activity without experiencing what they would view as the negative consequences of sexual activity, which they would say are things like sexually transmitted diseases and pregnancy. So they would view pregnancy as a negative consequence to be avoided. And they would say that that's their goal. That's what they're trying to do. Sex isn't a bad thing. People should be able to have sex, but we need to teach them how to do it in a safe way. That's what they would say.
Okay.
Now, the other type of presentation would be, or did you want to ask a question there? Because I was going to go into the second. So that's the sex education.
Oh, yeah. You actually gave me a perfect segue to ask my next question for you. In a perfect world, would your National Marriage Campaign advocate for all types of sexual information being taken out of the school to be relegated to the parents? Or do you believe, this could be a personal opinion of yours, right, that it's actually good to have that type of information in schools so long as it's biblically aligned? What would your position be on that?
Yes, good question. I do think in an ideal world that this would be something that would be handled in the home by the parents, that it was not part of, you know, education, quote unquote, I would say has overflowed its banks and has wandered into a lot of area that doesn't really need to be in, right? So ideally, yes. But then, of course, ideally, all education in my from my perspective would be done in the home by the parents. And I've argued that that was the original Little Red Schoolhouse, basically. The original American educational system was a Little Red Schoolhouse where people in the neighborhood basically gathered together. And, you know, one lady, typically a lady from the community who represented the views and values of those families, sort of, it was sort of like what we would say is a homeschool co-op today, in a sense, right? That was the Little Red Schoolhouse. And, but now we're getting into another conversation. But coming back to your question, yes, that would be the ideal. However, the reality is that many schools are going to teach something. And what we would say is if you're going to teach something in health class, you should teach something that is objectively true and healthy and beneficial for youth. And that's where the National Marriage Campaign comes in. What we want to lift up is a message of health for our kids that is, again, objectively true. So the contrary message to what the sex ed people would say, and I view our programs, and that is a curriculum that we have that's associated with our campaign called the Success Sequence Program, that is designed as a replacement for sex education. We would say that sex education has no place in the classroom. It's actually doing great harm to our young people, and that should be replaced by what we would call the success sequence program, where we're teaching young people how to prepare well for healthy future marriage. Okay. And so our message would be, yes, sex is a good thing within the context of a marriage relationship. So the message shouldn't be, here's contraception that you could use, but rather, here's how to exercise self-discipline, self-control, personal responsibility to reserve sexual activity for the context of a marriage relationship where it is safe and healthy and beneficial. In doing so, you are benefiting, again, yourself, your spouse, your child, your community, and it is an objectively superior message to the sex education message. And we believe that schools have an obligation to teach students what is the safest, healthiest context for sexual activity to occur, and that is within a marriage relationship. Therefore, we have launched the National Marriage Campaign to highlight that point of view. Now, having said that, there are a number of quote-unquote abstinence education programs that they actually don't even call it abstinence education anymore. They call it sexual risk avoidance education. And there is little discussion, if any, on marriage. And so what used to be abstinence until marriage education has now become something called sexual risk avoidance education. And the emphasis, as the name implies, is how to avoid risk of sexual activity. And what they will typically say is the best way to avoid consequences of sexual activity is to wait. It's to wait.
Yeah. Wait till what?
And so right. This is our argument. This is, again, why we're doing the National Marriage Campaign. Because if you're going to say wait, you've got to be super clear about that. It's not wait until you're older, wait until you're 18, wait until you're in college, wait until you're in love, wait until you do your 20-point Cosmo quiz. It's wait until marriage, because that is the only objective, beneficial message for our youth.
Yeah, and the vacuum will have to be filled by something. You know, if you're going to be telling people don't do that, well, you need to point them in another direction because people are constantly going. You know, that's our trajectory as humans is to continually move. That is what your purpose is with the National Marriage Campaign, is to provide a biblical alternative to the world saying, you know, today you live and tomorrow you die. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to imply that there are no sexual risk avoidance education programs that don't say wait until marriage.
Of course.
There are some, but it's increasingly difficult to find them, to be honest with you. Many of them have scaled back their language so as not to quote unquote offend. And so they kind of leave that part off. And so you're kind of left with this kind of, and some will even say things like, and this is very common, unfortunately, sexual risk avoidance means waiting until you're in a long-term mutual monogamous relationship. Because they don't want to say marriage. I'm like, well, but what is that? See, the problem with
right.
that, if I'm going to talk to a group of high school students, for example, and I'm going to say, you know what, kids, the best thing for you to do is wait until you're in a long-term mutual monogamous relationship. Mm. Okay, well, first of all, if they're in high school and if they've been in a relationship for any length of, because high school years are like dog years. Like, if I'm in a relationship for 3 months, 6 months, a year, are you kidding me? So
that's true. Yeah.
You said, teacher, abstinence teacher, that I should wait until I'm in a long-term mutual monogamous relationship. Well, we've been going out for a year. We are so in love. We're going to get married one day. Your message just told those kids that they're fine to have sex. Your abstinence message just communicated to them that they had a green light for sex. Because what did you tell them? You told them wait until you're in a long-term relationship. But the problem is a long-term is a totally subjective term. That could be 3 weeks, that could be 3 months, that could be 3 years, whatever it is. And let's even go to there. Let's go to 3 years. Let's say you start dating someone, you know, as a freshman in high school. Now you're seniors. You've been going out for three. That has to be even a subjective term, you know, that's going to be long term for anybody. So I'm thinking for high school long term is anything, you know, again, it's just going to be different for everybody. You can't know. And that's the problem, right? That's the problem, is that it's going to be different for everybody. You don't have a clear, objective, foundational message to provide for them.
My question is, I'm listening to you talk, and the one question I would have is, well, you can't guarantee marriage is going to last, though. So why not have sex before marriage? Because I don't know if my significant other would divorce me. You know, like the majority of marriages are going to end. Like, that's what we see all around us, is divorce rates are pretty high. So what's the point of even getting married?
Well, ironically, if you look at the divorce rates and you look at the sex outside of marriage rates, guess what those two graphs look like? So they're really in tandem, right? So in other words, as we have broken down our sexual norms and increased sexual activity outside the context of marriage, that has been accompanied by a breakdown of marriage and an increase in the divorce rate. Now, divorce rates are coming down, but marriage rates are also coming down. So you have to watch that. We've got data that shows, and this is government data, Family Survey, National Survey of Family Growth, will show that if you have two people who have never had sex with anybody else before they were married, they've only ever had sex with one person, it's the person that they married, at 5-year anniversary, those relationships are almost wholly intact. It's like 97-98% for women and men. So at 5-year anniversary, those who never had sexual activity prior to marriage or outside of marriage, at 5-year anniversary, 98-99% of them are still married. Okay. Sexual relationship outside of the marriage relationship or prior to marriage relationship, and that percentage drops from 98% to 67%, about 2/3.
Wow.
It's a sharp drop.
So what's the reason for that?
Drop 2 and it drops to 50%. So in other words, sex bonds two people, right? So sex is a very intimate, physiologically, psychologically, spiritually, it is a very intimate bond. This is Paul's argument in, I think, 1 Corinthians 6, where he talks about, you know, bonding yourself to a prostitute. The problem is you've become one with her. That's what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a deep spiritual bond that occurs in a sexual relationship. And if you are sexually active prior to marriage and then you break that off, and then you have another relationship and you break that off, and then you do it again and again, then what's happening, you're really practicing for divorce. You're preparing yourself for divorce. You're teaching yourself, conditioning yourself, that this one-time, lifelong relationship is breakable. It's breakable.
Wow.
And so you enter in already having broken that. Now, I want to be very careful and say that if you've already been sexually active as a young person, you can absolutely start over again. And one of my favorite verses is Romans 8:1-2. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, for the law of the Spirit of life in Christ has set you free from the law of sin and of death. In other words, just because you've already done some stuff doesn't mean you have to keep on doing some stuff. The best thing for a young person who has already experienced sexual activity is to, first of all, be very glad that they're listening to this podcast, because learning, and I mean that quite seriously, because it's really important to know that you can absolutely start over again, and that the sooner that you start over again, the better that's going to be for you, right? And even though you've already been sexually experienced, it doesn't doom a future marriage. But it does mean there are going to be some challenges that you're going to have to overcome. And you can be aware of that. You can be diligent in working toward building a healthy foundation for your future marriage. But you're aware that has complicated things a little bit, because you don't know if there was a latent STD that you received as a result of that. There was an article in the Chicago Tribune some years ago about women in their late 20s who were infertile. They were unable to have children because they had gotten chlamydia. They were sexually active as teenagers. Chlamydia is an asymptomatic STD that does damage to the fallopian tubes. They had no idea. And they were, this was a Chicago Tribune article talking to these women, and they were in their late 20s and they were married and unable to have children. And they were like, we had no idea that when we were sexually active as teenagers, that we had contracted a sexually transmitted disease that was doing damage to our reproductive system. And now that we're married. So all I'm saying is there are a number of challenges, right? They can be overcome for sure, but they are challenges. So you have, there's a tension there. Absolutely, you can start over again. And what we would say is the criticism of a abstinence until marriage education program like ours is that what the sex education people will say about us is, well, you know, the problem with your program is you don't have anything for sexually active kids, by which they mean you don't give them contraception. And you're right, we don't. Because I don't want to do anything that would in any way facilitate a continued harmful pathway for these young people. What I want to do is help them understand and appreciate the ability to start over, the benefits of starting over, and guide them, encourage them on that path. We've got research out of a group called the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, which is a sort of a Planned Parenthood aligned group, where they've done research showing that about 2/3 of sexually active teens say, I wish I would have waited. So the majority of sexually active teens are not necessarily happy about it. They're not like, yay, I'm so happy I'm down this path. Many of them, the majority of them are more like, maybe that wasn't such a great idea. How do I get my car back up on the road? You know, I'm over here in this ditch and I want to get back on the road. And so one of the things what we want to do is help young people do that. What we want to say is, let us help you understand how to form a healthy relationship, how to understand the principles of self-discipline, self-responsibility, responsibility, self-discipline, self-control. And we want to help you get back on path so that you can begin to prepare well for a healthy future marriage. The purpose of the National Marriage Campaign is to strengthen the institution of marriage in America today. And we believe that the best way to strengthen the institution of marriage is to help young people now, a new generation of Americans, understand and value and appreciate the beauty of marriage and understand why waiting for marriage matters. Now, for my Christian youth, and we have programs, we have programs for public school, we have programs for Christian schools, churches. For my Christian kids particularly, if I'm at a Christian school or a church group, my goals are twofold, both behavioral and apologetic. First of all, behavioral. I want my Christian kids to understand the benefits of living out God's purposes and plans rightly, right? 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, abstain from all sexual immorality. Because there's benefits in doing that, that you can live your life for the glory of God. And so I want to be clear with them behaviorally, that they would live that out, that they would not go down the path of sexual activity and sexual experience. Secondly, my goal is both it's behavioral, but it's also apologetic. I want my Christian young people to understand fundamentally why this is a really good idea, both scripturally and logically. And I want them to have a rational response, an argument. I want them not to sit at their school in, you know, and sort of cower in the corner as you know, as though they can't speak up. I want them to be able to understand what they believe, why they believe it, and I want them to be able to communicate that clearly to their peers. And so that's my goal for Christian youth, behavioral and apologetic. Live it out and speak it clearly to the culture, because the rest of your peers need to hear it, and they need to hear it from you.
Amen. And while we wrap up this particular episode of the podcast, can you actually give our audience like a tool or a tip on how to be able to relate this in a Christian loving manner to their peers? You know, if, how can Christians who are in high school, even in college, how can they respond to their friends who are very calloused about talking about sex?
Well, I think this goes back to one of the earlier questions about negative messaging about sex, right? Which is common. Mm-hmm. Bad things, bad things, bad things. Don't have sex because bad things are going to happen to you. I don't think that's really the way to go. And that's really not our style. What we want to do is more lift up the good and the beautiful. And so I guess I would be encouraging, apologetically, my Christian kids, I would be encouraging them to be sharing their own future hopes, goals, and dreams about future marriage and family and why they think that's a really good thing and why they're pursuing that. And let the peers be more curious about that. It's like, wait, you're doing, wait, what? Could you explain a little bit more about that? So that your message isn't, hey, non-Christian peer or whatever, like you shouldn't do that because bad things are going to happen to you. It should be more along the lines, I think, and I'm just talking off the top here. I think it's more along the lines of, you know, the reason why I'm not doing that is because I really understand that sex is a super valuable thing. It's super wonderful and amazing. And I want to reserve it for the context of a marriage because someday I hope to get married and have a family. And I don't want to mess that up. And so here's what I'm looking forward to. So share your own hopes, goals, dreams, and why resisting sexual pressure and sexual activity now is helping you to form a pathway toward healthy future marriage. Because the reality is all of the principles that you will employ in exercising abstinence are the same principles that are going to benefit you in a marriage relationship. Self-discipline, self-control, respect, responsibility, those kinds of things, right? So I would be more encouraging young people to be sharing their own, first of all, have your own hopes, goals, and dreams about that, and then express why. And then that's not in any way, you know, coming across as judgy or condemning or critical. I'm not telling, and look, I say this to kids all the time. I'm not telling you what to do. You do whatever you want. And that would be my message even to my non-Christian friends. I'm not telling you what to do. Here's what I'm doing. Here's why I'm doing it. You do whatever you want. And so I think when you do it that way, it comes across as very, well, it is very authentic and honest, and it's not in any way judging or critical. I'm not telling you what to do. Do whatever you want. When you do that, they're more like, no, tell me more.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of, I was at the Iowa State Fair, and I was with some friends that I just met that day, and I was holding my nephew, and I kind of joked about, you know, I'm like, oh, I feel like a mom with my little nephew over here. And one of my new friends looked at me in horror and like, well, I hope you never are a single mom. You know, like that. I hope that you never come to that. And I'm like, well, no, I know I won't. And they're like, well, why is that? And I was able to share with them like, well, what marriage is for. That is like the beauty of what you were saying. That's a cradle. And I want a cradle to put any of my future children in. It was such a beneficial, fruitful conversation because their eyes were just like, wow, I never thought of it that way. And so it just goes right back to your point where you're not judging them for living the way they live. You're just sharing your beliefs and why you're doing it the way you do.
And why would you? Why would you judge them? It's none of my business what you want to do. I can share with you why I think this is a great way to go, but you don't have to go that way. That's a much more, to be honest with you, that's more, that's winning them with honey, right? And I find that works really well. Because kids want to know more about that. Because again, it's not something that they've heard. Where have they heard that message? Where have they heard that? It's honestly a new concept, and it's a freeing concept to them because it gives them hope for the future. Look, I mean, there's so much more we could say about this, like the whole mental illness and depression and nervousness and angst of the culture and the planet is dying and all of that. And young people today are so freaked out by so many things that when you can help them see a vision of the future that is wonderful and amazing and beautiful, and it's something that they didn't even imagine that they could possibly have the opportunity to explore and to attain. It's really powerful. It's really powerful, and it's necessary. We you know, one of our slogans is inspiring hope for America's youth. They've got to have the hope that there's something better down the road. And when you take marriage off the table, it's hard to envision that, right? Not that you can't have an amazing, you know, life if you're not married, not saying that at all. But if that's something that you want, but you don't think it's attainable, then it becomes much more difficult, is what I'm saying.
You just listened to part one of our amazing conversation with Scott Phelps of the National Marriage Campaign. You are not going to want to miss our conversation in part two. But until next time, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.